Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, day nine of the Australian Open, done and dusted. David fresh from the recording booth. Matt and I fresh from just watching loads of it on the telly.
You say fresh. I don't feel very fresh.
I mean commentary booth, don't I? Something like that. Anyway, I've overused the word fresh. None of us are particularly fresh, but we are. What are we? I mean, some of the tennis overnight was glorious. We are sort of basking in the aftermath of one of the weirdest matches of the tournament so far that I don't think any of us are quite yet to relive yet. Shall I save that particular delicacy for later in the podcast?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Shall I start with some potentially very, very good news?
Oh, yeah. Go on.
Well, subject to there being no reported cases in the Melbourne community of COVID-19 tomorrow, that is Wednesday, it should be the last day of tennis without crowds at the Australian Open. Now, obviously, there are reasons far bigger than tennis why we hope that there are no cases of COVID-19 in the community tomorrow in Melbourne or anywhere, frankly. But we're a tennis podcast. We're here to talk about the tennis, and we are ready. Particularly after the match that we're not yet ready to relive, we are ready for crowds to return, aren't we?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And we're ready for fake crowd noise cheering not to come along after another a double fault.
It was another shocker, wasn't it?
Although that was very funny. Andrew and I were very amused in the middle of the night at what we thought was sarcastic fake crowd use. About a double fault.
I think you're overestimating the DJ.
I think funny.
It was complete and total lack of understanding of tennis rallies. I mean, and when they might be coming to an end.
It must be so tempting to just press them, you know, because they're there.
I'm not saying there's not much to that job. There's a lot of finesse to it. But in terms of the actual nuts and bolts, one of the only very fundamental parts of it is to press the buttons at the right time and not press them at the wrong times. So if you're just pressing them because you can't resist, I'd say you should be excluded from the running.
I think my doppelganger must be doing it because I'm sure that I would be rubbish at it.
Yeah, maybe they're just sort of emphasising to the Melbourne authorities the importance of crowds returning. They don't want to make it sound too authentic.
It feels like a long time ago now, doesn't it? Crowds.
Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. Shows how quickly you adjust to, quote, new normal.
Mm. Oh, that would be great if the tournament could finish with 4 days of crowds. Fingers crossed.
And all being well, the first day with returning crowds, Thursday, will feature Naomi Osaka against Serena Williams. It'll also feature Novak Djokovic against Aslan Karatsev. We'll build up to building up to that, I think. But we will perhaps focus on, for now, Naomi Osaka against Serena Williams and the events that led up to that semi-final being set. We started at 1:30 in the morning with Osaka dismissing, really, Su Weishei, 6-2, 6-2, emphasising how much of a better player and a better big moment player than she is than even 2 years ago when she won the Australian Open title for the first time. I mean, it was a performance of ultimate dominance from Naomi Osaka, I thought.
Mm. She was brilliant. Matt, you wrote about that 2 years ago, didn't you, when we were in Australia? You did that blog, and we linked to it from our newsletter last night. And great read. I mean, when just sort of viscerally, when you were courtside compared to what you saw last night, compare and contrast.
I think the main thing is when she played Shea 2 years ago, I would describe Osaka as frazzled and not really understanding how to play her and going outside of her comfort zone to try and combat Shea's game. Whereas today, I saw a Naomi Osaka who was clear-headed and had a definitive strategy, which seemed to be to hit the ball hard and up the middle of the court, take away Shea's angles and play with a certain amount of patience and discipline and pick the right time to go for her shots. She just executed it with such control and such calmness and demonstrated the fact that that match is on her racket if she trusts herself to do the right thing. And the player she is now is someone who does trust herself to do the right thing when it matters. Yeah, it was completely different. That match 2 years ago, I thought Osaka was going out of the Australian Open. I mean, the opening game today was probably the toughest game she faced on serve, where Shea was really attacking her second serve. Once she came through that, she was extremely calm, and there was never any doubt in my mind, really, past that first game, that Osaka was going to be quite a comfortable winner.
This will perhaps prematurely lead us on to Osaka Serena preview territory, but is there a match in tennis that isn't on Osaka's racket right now?
Good
She's
question.
Beaten so many different types of opponents, and it's always felt on her racket. Muguruza, you know.
I mean, there's two players left in this draw who I think would provide an answer to that question. She plays one of them next, Serena. And I would be very interested to see her play Ash Barty as well, who has an ability to disrupt her game, I think, more than anyone in the world if she's on. I think it could be on Osaka's racket, but I would need to see it.
She'd have to be able to declare it. She'd probably have to play. If she played lights out, is there anything they can do? You know, that's a question mark I have. The thing that I noticed today, which is something that I noticed 2 years ago when she won that US Open, and I think maybe not in the final as much as in the rounds leading up to it, was her foot speed and her ability to get behind a ball. And it's not something you always notice, because often she's just blazing winners all over the place. Because it was Shea, and because of the way she plays, I got the sense, you talked about sort of the discipline and patience she employed, and to me it was as if she'd gone out and thought, right, I'm going to use my legs today so that she cannot get anything past me. If I get my feet to everything, then my racket can do the talking. I can't just try and necessarily just blast her off the court. I've got to deal with what she's throwing at me as well. And her feet are moving so quickly. It's like looking at the roadrunner, you know, that sort of blurring motion. And I'm looking at Shea and thinking, how do you win this? How do you get the ball past her? I do not know how, because you're hitting great shots. You're doing what you do. I mean, it wasn't her best day, but you do what you do, and it's not having any impact. And so that's why I was so impressed. It makes me feel like Osaka has just grown and matured as a player and a champion, that she loves the spotlight now. She loves her place in it, because she's not trying to be what anybody's told her in the past, maybe when she was growing up, that you have to be like. She's just her, and she's made that work for her.
She's an inspiration person. That is how Serena Williams described Naomi Osaka, which I kind of loved. David, this match was played at 1:30 in the morning, UK time. Why were you watching it?
That's a very good question.
That was not the plan we discussed.
I 100% had no intention of waking up for it, even though I desperately wanted to, because I thought it was just silly to try to wake up at whatever it was, 1:30, and then stay up all the way until my shift started at 7 a.m. and then do what has turned out to be 6-7 hours of commentary.
And then a podcast.
And then a podcast, which we're now doing with my bloodshot eyes looking at you. However, my 4:30 alarm call wasn't required because I woke up at precisely 2:10. And that was the end of things.
It's just literally never happened to me. I can't even imagine that scenario.
And then it was such a quick match that I had about an hour and 15 minutes to kill before Grigor Dimitrov got on the call.
An hour and 15 Aslan. Minutes to get yourself pumped. I mean, that's a decent nap right there, David, an hour and 15 minutes.
Well, I had a go.
Right.
But I'm not the best napper.
Okay.
There are things I do better than napping, as you can probably tell.
Right. So Naomi Osaka wins through. She knows exactly who's waiting for her in the next round. She says, oh, usually I try not to look at my draw, but everyone's been asking me about my draw this whole tournament because of how rough it was. You know, remember that quote that we cited in the preview podcast about how she loves a tough draw? So she said, look, of course I know that Serena's waiting for me because everybody's been telling me about this draw. And she said, she was asked whether she'd be watching Serena and Halep play later on. And she said, yeah, of course, I watch all of Serena's matches, which is just cracking. It's just, yeah, a great line.
And very relatable.
Yeah, very relatable, absolutely. So Osaka wins through pretty straightforwardly. David has an hour and a quarter of attempting to nap. And then Dimitrov-Karatsev happens, which we'll come on to later. And then there's another gap during which... Was there any attempted napping, David, or just...
No.
No.
Was that? David was working at this
point. Right, yeah. Okay. Just
chatting on the radio by then.
Basking in the pumpedness of Karatsev Dimitrov and building up to Serena Halep.
No, I was on a bit of a downer, to be honest.
Don't give the game away.
Yeah.
People are hanging on for the big Karatsev Dimitrov section later. That's why I've teased it. But first, the big Serena Halep section. Serena was extraordinary. It was a more competitive match, I think, than the scoreline lets on. 6-3, 6-3 to Serena. She's into the Australian Open semis for the 9th time. A Grand Slam semi-final for the 40th time. And she has equaled Roger Federer's record of most Grand Slam wins. 362, I think, and counting. I mean, Federer's counting as well. He's just counting from more of a backseat position just at the moment, which is all very extraordinary. She was in trouble in that second set. She had to win the last, well, she didn't have to, but she did win the last five games of the match in that second set from twice being a breakdown. Patrick Mouratoglou described it as vintage Serena. It's hard to argue with that, really. It felt vintage.
Yeah, I felt like we've been moving in this direction anyway all week long, but I really feel we're learning something about Serena, where she is right now, both with that performance, which, yeah, it was fantastic because I thought Simona Halep played well and did what she can do to make life difficult for Serena. She was moving, she was hitting, she was trying to make it physical, trying to bring movement into the match, because Simona Halep's one of the best movers in the world, and yet Serena was happy to go toe-to-toe with her, side-to-side with her. Yes, she was finishing as many points as she could on her serve, and she was really bringing out the heavy artillery with the ground strokes, but she was a match for her from the baseline, which the woman turns 40 in September. That is... not normal, and she is not normal. She is a superhero, as far as I'm concerned. And she showed again just how great she is, because I didn't think this level of tennis. I thought she might win another Grand Slam. I thought she would last year, but I thought this level of tennis was probably beyond her now, because this did look like the Serena of old. And then I found it very interesting when she was interviewed on court afterwards, saying and admitting that Patrick and her had discussed how she'd got to bring defense into her game and be able to move. And, you know, she'd been working. Obviously, she needed to get fit again, but she was just buzzing in that interview afterwards. I mean, she was like a kid who's just reached her first quarterfinal or semifinal and is just so excited about it all. And that's infectious, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it was Jim Courier who mentioned the word movement, I think, and Serena's face lit up as though to say, oh, you've noticed. Because it has been brilliant, hasn't it? And yeah, she was dancing in the tunnel afterwards. I don't know whether you saw that on the world feed footage. Oh, right. I saw she was walking back to the locker room dancing. Yeah, I agree. Vintage Serena. The only thing that was slightly off was her serve, which ended up, in my opinion, making the rest of her performance all the more extraordinary, because I think of a serve generally, and especially Serena's serve, as such a foundation for the rest of the game to flourish from that. And yet it was actually her return which was providing her that stability in the match, because every return game she was threatening Halep. The first return of the match she hit was a 96-mile-an-hour forehand winner, which she just stepped into, and that was a sign of things to come, really. Her movement, as you said, was impeccable. Again, the way she trusts it on the big points, so she doesn't have to go for winners. She can hang in the rallies with someone like Halep, we haven't seen for quite a long time. And yeah, it's all made me change my perspective on Serena a little bit. I think in the last few years, I've sort of been picking her to win Grand Slam titles on the basis of history, on the basis of, oh, well, it's Serena. She's got to get another Grand Slam title. Of course she will. That's why she's playing. Even though the reality of what we've been seeing in front of us has actually been suggesting, actually, maybe the level's not quite there, and maybe there are other players in the draw playing better than her. It's a total switch for me now, this tournament, because the reality of what I'm seeing is telling me that she's playing Grand Slam winning tennis. And maybe Osaka's playing as well as her, maybe Barty, but she's right there. Her level is there. And yet it's the recent history which is putting the doubt in my mind, because I'm thinking, okay, she's playing so well, but she's had 4 Grand Slam finals in the last few years where she hasn't won, and a Grand Slam semi-final at the US Open where she hasn't won. So I need to see this tennis again in those matches. So it's a total flip for me in terms of how I'm viewing Serena this tournament.
That's so interesting and so well put. It's hard to disagree with any of that. I think if she, I mean, this is a ridiculous if. I'm not suggesting she ought to have been or whatever, but if she had been playing this tennis when she first came back, she'd have won 24 and beyond by now. The problem is, in the time that it's taken her to get back to this level, the others have got so much better, and there's a group of them. It's not just one she has to get past here. If she does beat Osaka, she's probably got Barty. That is the problem. I agree with you. I see that level, and I think that level is sort of in theory good enough to win a Grand Slam, but I see that level in a lot of players now.
There may also be scar tissue that has built up over the last 2 or 3 years from those missed opportunities. But I'm increasingly starting to feel a way that I didn't feel at the start of the tournament, partly because one of the people I'm going to talk about has came in with an injury. But I mean, I'm just starting to feel like the weight of history, rather than holding Serena Williams and Rafael Nadal back, may make them unstoppable.
God, imagine if this is the tournament where Serena gets 24 and Nadal gets 21.
That's how I'm starting to feel about it.
Is it now, really? When did you first have that moment of, that could be a thing?
Yesterday. I nearly said it on the podcast yesterday and we ran out of time.
But there's always time for a line like that, David.
It just,
I was probably
just
waffling on about dogs.
I mean, the thing is that when I look at Nadal's draw, for instance, it's still so rough from here on paper. He's got Tsitsipas, Medvedev, and then Djokovic, most likely. That's what you'd expect. But I also think with him that who's going to stop him? Who's going to stop him if he has got his sights on this record finally after 20 years of his career? How do you stop the guy, right? And then I look at Serena and I think, well, there you go. There's somebody else just as great, arguably maybe even greater, or certainly they're equals. And she might just have the force of personality and in her own mind greatness, her own perception of who she is. And the other two players that she's likely to come up against, Osaka and Barty, have this perception of who she is and how great she is. How do you stop that?
I think Barty has that more than Osaka. I don't think Osaka carries any baggage onto the court against Serena.
She's still her hero, even though she's beaten her, even though she's become even better since beating her. If Serena,
I've never seen that affect her before.
If
why
Serena
would it now?
Really turns up and really lays it on.
Oh, for
I'm
sure.
I'm just
for
very
sure.
interested
I think that
to
match
see.
Is a 51-49, but
I'm just very interested to see whether Osaka maybe slightly becomes inhibited by that.
It's an interesting thought. I hadn't had that thought. I think if Serena beats Osaka, it will be because Serena's playing so well, rather than the occasion or the match affecting Osaka. But it could happen.
But
we get to see it.
That level of playing well may slightly shake Osaka, and it may be just enough to win a third set tiebreak or something like that. I don't expect Osaka to just freeze and be not very good. I just wonder whether, because I've got it the other way around. In my pre-tournament predictions, I've got Osaka beating her because I didn't foresee this level from Serena Williams. I foresaw Serena getting to the semifinals because of who she is and how good she is, but playing almost on memory. This isn't her playing on memory. This is her playing properly good stuff, really, really good.
Two inspiration people on the court together at the same time. It's as much as one can wish for. She was asked in her press conference when the last time she felt like the way it was phrased was that those longer defensive rallies, like I think the one that was specifically referenced was there was a 20-shot rally in the 3-all game in the second set. She was asked, when was the last time you felt like those longer defensive rallies belonged to you? And she said, probably the summer of 1926.
It's a good line.
Yeah. She's so pleased with herself. She's so pleased with herself to be playing like this. And I guess for the plan to be working. This was obviously something, it's not happened by accident. They set about doing this. And, you know, we all know what it feels like in our very small ways to work hard at something and to see, you know, to see that cause and effect. It's a very satisfying feeling. And it's just great seeing Serena buzzing, seeing her. It feels like sort of kind of experiencing something new in tennis at 39 years of age with 23 Grand Slams. That's really infectious. Yeah.
If it was your
wonderful
football team, you'd say that it was like we've got a new signing.
Which isn't always
new
that
manager
great.
Bounce.
Oh, yeah. David's all about the new manager bounce at the moment.
It's like we've just signed Cristiano Ronaldo or something, or Lionel Messi.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's not very likely, is it?
Or Diagne.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
So is anyone prepared to say what they think is going to happen in Serena and Osaka? She also called Osaka a cool cat.
Well, she's not wrong.
Yeah, she's not. None of this is contestable. It's all very true. Anyone prepared to say what they think is going to
happen? Well, I think the big question is, am I prepared in my case to just go back on what I said at the start of the tournament, which is that Osaka would beat Williams?
I think
you
said Osaka would beat
that?
Everyone.
Well, I did, yeah.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, I mean,
so did you.
No, I said Barty was going to beat Osaka in the final.
Right. Well, that's still on.
I feel quite shaky about that.
Did you have Serena in the semis as well?
Catherine? Yes, I had Serena losing to Osaka in the semis. So I'm going to stand by it,
right?
But I don't feel confident.
Yeah, I think I agree. I do think Serena will have to serve better against Osaka than she did against Halep, because Osaka will probably serve better than Halep. And I don't think Serena will be able to punish Osaka's serve in the same way she did with Halep. But of course, she's capable of doing that. She's got the best serve ever. So if she finds that, then that could be the piece she needs.
I can't remember watching what I felt like was a truly great Serena performance in which she didn't serve very well. That is, I mean, that's...
Because she always serves well. Well, until today.
Yeah, but it's always, or certainly when she's playing well, it's all built around the serve.
And actually, the serve is the one thing that never seems to go, really, even when she's playing badly.
And serving well sort of gives her the confidence to take risks elsewhere, because, you know, she feels like she's always going to get a couple of free points. So, yeah, I that is extraordinary today, but I agree with you, Matt. Everything has to be, against Osaka in this form, in this mood, everything has to be as good as it can be, even with this revamped Serena.
I reserve the right to wait until tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Me too. And
hang
and it's
on,
not
you'd
just...
already declared, Matt. You can't re-declare tomorrow.
Yeah, Matt.
Sorry. And thing is, Osaka's in this tournament having saved match points, and there's something about that which I just think gives her an extra edge
very,
as well.
Very Australian Open.
Yes, it is. She's spoken about
she
that.
She has. Yeah, she said it was on her mind in the previous match that I've forgotten who it was against. Who did she play before Shay?
No, so it was Muguruza before Shay.
The Muguruza match, yeah.
Muguruza, who she saved the match points against.
Yeah, she was asked about that afterwards, and she said, yeah, it does give you a feeling of not invincibility, but you know, it doesn't matter how far my back is against the wall, I can come out of this. It was kind of an Andreescu type quote, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a little shield, I think. A shield of confidence.
Okay, well, you can both have 24 hours, and I reserve the right to change my mind in the next 24 hours. I mean, nothing's going to change in that time. But yes,
yeah,
you can have. That you need something to fill your big gap in the middle of the night when there's no tennis on and you can't sleep, David.
Correct. I need to be able to gather my thoughts, Catherine, quietly on my own over a cup of tea and six digestive biscuits.
You say that, but I know you've got a fridge full of milk and beer.
Correct.
Yeah. Like a champion.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So, David, as our middle-of-the-night Dimitrov Karatsev correspondent,
mm-hmm.
all in the name of the pod, obviously, yeah. Could you fill me in on what happened, please?
Yeah, because I wasn't shadow swinging backhands in my room on my own in the middle of the night at all while it was on. What happened was...
That's why you're not getting to sleep, David.
Yeah, I know. I'm not very good at the sitting still thing, you know. What happened was that Karatsev broke in, I think, the first game, and then Dimitrov won about six games in a row. And he was playing exactly as I thought he would play in order to beat the guy, which was use his movement. He's developed a really good backhand slice on defense, I think, which diffuses players with power. And that's what he did. And he just stayed in the rallies. And there was a stat that popped up that Karatsev in the first set hit two winners and 19 unforced errors. And he also, he played a game, I think, of about 9 minutes on his own serve, followed by another one of about 7 minutes. And he looked really hot and really bothered by the conditions. And you thought, he's got no chance. Dimitrov has just come in with the perfect strategy, and he seems mature enough to carry it out. Second set continues the same way. Dimitrov had chances, didn't take them. It gets to 4-4, and then my feeling was that Dimitrov choked at 4-4. He suddenly lost all of his timing. He started to kind of lean over to way too far over to his left on his serve, and he was double faulting and almost falling over with the serve. And you were watching rallies, and the ball is just not coming out of the centre of the racket a lot of the time. He's leaving it short. Karatsev's gaining in confidence and starting to blast through him. And a couple of break points come and go, and eventually Karatsev breaks 5-4, serves it out, wins the set, one set all. I still thought, you know, if Dimitrov just gets himself together here, he'll be all right. Then it becomes apparent he's got a physical problem in the third set, and he's suddenly not moving properly at all. And then by the 4-1 stage of the third set, he is virtually just rolling his arm over, and he has the trainer out. Trainer comes out, and he actually says, I had a back spasm problem yesterday, and they'd given him heavy ibuprofen painkillers to deal with it, which I reckon had just worn off, basically. And his back started to go into spasm again. He went off the court. He clearly was thinking about retiring, but he decided to carry on, loosened him up a bit. But he couldn't play. He could not play in the deciding set. It's really quite jarring to watch somebody who covers the court that well be unable to move properly at all. And I hate saying it like this, because Karatsev, what a brave guy not to completely freeze. You know, he's 114 in the world. He is the first Grand Slam male debutant. He'd never been in a main draw of a Grand Slam before. He's 27. He's never made a main draw at all. He's the first one ever in the open era. So you're talking 53 years, the first one and more to get into the semifinals of a Grand Slam when he's playing his first one. So I feel bad for not leading with him, because it's a great story. But it was sad seeing Grigor walk off the court and try and walk up the little stairs away from the court. And he was doing it one step at a time with his bag still over his shoulders. And he just looked, it was horrible to look at. But, you know, what a great story for Karatsev. I'm not sure Dimitrov would have won anyway once it went once at all, because he was rocking. And this guy's connection on a tennis ball from both sides, forehand and backhand, when he connects sweetly, I mean, he's hitting the ball harder than anybody in the draw. That is measured. That we saw some stats today. And you see it, because it's totally flat when he catches it, but it still goes in the court. He's pinging the thing around if he catches it right. But my goodness, he can also make some dramatic unforced errors.
Yeah, he is the lowest ranked man to reach a Grand Slam semi-final since You can both get this.
Goran.
Goran Ivanisevic, Wimbledon 2001. The Karatsev slam, David? Is that the storyline you're overlooking in your Nadal-Serena scenario?
Yes, it is.
You just told me how good he is.
Look, I mean, I've thought he would lose his last two matches, so you can take what I'm saying with a pinch of salt. He's beaten Ogier Aliassime as well, but I would imagine it will end in the next round.
I sort of just want him to win for the speech. Or reach the final for the speech.
No, you'll be disappointed.
Just went for a toilet. So it turns out Vladimir Putin's secret weapon is quite good. Beware of Russia and their weapons. He's got calves, like, you know what happens to Popeye when he has spinach and his biceps ping up? It looks like that has happened to Aslan Karatsev's calves.
He's put together, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He's a hulking great thing. And he will play in his first ever Grand Slam semi-final, Novak Djokovic, who is going for Grand Slam number 18. Aslan Karatsev has played 18 Grand Slam sets in his life. In his life. So sort of kind of on paper, more of a mismatch you couldn't possibly imagine. But, you know, if we've learned anything about Aslan Karatsev this fortnight, it's that he'll give
and
it...
And we have.
I mean, literally everything we know about Aslan Karatsev we've learned this fortnight. We've squeezed it all into a condensed period of time. I don't think he'll be cowed by the occasion or by the opponent. I think he'll give it a good old go. And I don't think he'll be intimidated out there against an eight-time champion who, on the basis of today's performance, although he beat Alexander Zverev in four sets, it was, to quote Patrick Mouratoglou, not vintage. Not vintage by half. Agreed?
Yes. I do agree in terms of the overall level, I suppose. But part of me thinks, look, of course, Djokovic would love to have his tennis flowing and be playing brilliantly like we know he can, and he so often does. But part of me also thinks he's absolutely fundamentally in his element. He's got a certain amount in the tank, a certain limit he can push himself to, and it's about navigating that. And he does that better than anyone. And today, I think, against Zverev was a perfect example of that. He came out swinging, taking the ball really early, hitting it really flat, shortening the points. It just wasn't Djokovic. And he said he needed to do that to kind of loosen up. But then at all the crucial moments in the match, he became the Djokovic we are familiar with. And the important points, he knuckled down, he got the ball deep, he pushed Zverev around, and he won them. Mm. He peaked at those right moments. He understands the ebbs and flows of five-set tennis better than anyone, I think. And that is what it's about now for him, navigating these matches. And I think more than anything, the injury that he's got is kind of affecting his mood and his attitude a little bit, because his tennis doesn't seem particularly compromised when he decides to turn it on. It's just that he doesn't seem to have the energy, perhaps, or the wherewithal to have it on for the whole match. He's sort of picking and choosing his moments. So it perhaps makes him a little bit more vulnerable. Zverev had a lot of chances in the match, but his instincts to win the right points at the right time with his best tennis are absolutely there. Some of the shots he came up with when he needed to, the serves he found when he needed to, was extraordinary.
He outaced Alexander Zverev today, and Zverev had a good serving day, I would say. 23 aces for Djokovic to Zverev's 21. Zverev hit no double faults for the first hour and a half. He didn't hit many today. There are a couple of ill-timed ones, but I would say if you came into this match knowing nothing about Zverev's history of double faulting, it wouldn't be something you'd be remarking upon. No. From this match. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard balancing how much you think Zverev squandered opportunity versus what Matt put brilliantly there about Djokovic's ability to manage the ebbs and flows of a five-set match. Yeah. You know, he's a breakup in the fourth set, Zverev, and he's got multiple break points. I think he had him at 15-40 and then again had advantage to take a double break lead in that fourth set, which would surely have been decisive to take it to a fifth. And yet as soon as he didn't get the double break, you kind of knew the single break was its days were numbered.
I think he will have regrets today. And I think the handshake at the end tells you that. It wasn't every other time they've had the handshake, it's all been very warm and cuddly and you know, generous. And not that he wasn't, he shook hands with him, but it was cool. And he'll be really gutted by this loss. And to me, there are two. We've seen Djokovic win this title in two ways over the years. Go back 2 years ago, and he played absolutely lights out, some of the best tennis I've ever seen, to beat Nadal, thrash him in the final. A year later, he did what he did today. He managed the ebbs and flows of a match and outlasted Dominic Thiem, and he won the title that way. So, I mean, I think you're right about the mood. I think this whole thing, we can speculate as much as we like about the severity of the injury. We just can't know about that. We know that certain players like Berrettini have had that injury and pulled out. He hasn't. Now, we can speculate about it, but that's all we can do because we don't know. But I think that the very least you can see is it gets him down and it gets him stressed and he can't, and he's just trying to find a way to deal with it. Because it's not. I don't think he finds it easy, really, to know to deal with it. So it ends up all coming out in all this talking all the time.
And not just that. If you want evidence of exactly how stressed he was, just ask the poor ball kid that had to, with a dustpan and brush, sweep up the shards of Djokovic's racket that he had discharged so violently into the ground that it was quite a sight to behold. I mean, the whole, as you said on the radio, David, just the visual of that, this little kid, they'd changed ends by this point. So you didn't quite have the visual of the child at Djokovic's feet cleaning up his rageful mess. Zverev was there at that point, obviously not volunteering to help. But it was still a heck of a visual.
And Laura Robson only gave that 8 out of 10. I'm thinking,
what?
I don't see how you could have done it any more violently than he did it.
For a single smash, obviously we've seen the multiple racket smash performed by a couple of different entrants to the competition over the years. But for a single racket attempt, as good as it gets.
He had three goes at it. I mean, he smashed it three times. I think it's as emphatic a demolition job as you can find.
He was sort of crouched over, he put his whole body into it, sort of core included. There was quite a lot of sort of torsion of the core involved in the manoeuvre.
If he puts that into a forehand, he's proud of himself.
Yeah.
Why isn't that a rule, though, that if you break your racket, you have to sweep up the shards? That would be amazing.
Great idea.
Yeah, I think, are there often shards? I think it's pretty good going for there to be shards. Mm. But maybe now
a
rule
will be,
mess in
any shape or form, you have to clear it up.
Agreed. Well, we've established this with towels now. Andy Murray's very good at doing a little clean-up job of his area upon departing the court. I wish I could teach Billie Jean to do that. Djokovic first, then Billie Jean. but yeah, he wasn't happy. Jim Courier again did the post-match interview for that one, and you know, he's not shutting down the questions about the injury. And now the cynics would say because it suits him, because it suits him to have kind of the circus play out and the speculation, and it's on his opponent's mind. I don't think it'll be on Aslan Karatsev's mind. I think just blasting tennis balls is on Aslan Karatsev's mind. But I don't know. It's on Djokovic's mind as well. So, you know, the non-cynics would say, you know, why would he? Just as Nadal does, he's answering a straight question with a straight answer of what's in his mind at that time. All I can say is, again, if you came into that match with no prior knowledge, like on the Zverev serve thing, I don't think you'd end up speculating about whether he was injured. I think, yes, it took him a bit of time to warm up into the match. Maybe in the first set, and yeah, he seemed frustrated by something, but I don't think you would see any obvious signs of physical impairment.
But he also wasn't being demonstrative about it. I mean, he wasn't giving the signs. I mean, that people often get irritated by, of, oh, he looks like he's dying, and oh, now he's running around. He wasn't doing any of that today, really. He was just playing the match, really. Mm. So I agree with you. I mean, his game looked fine, and his behaviour looked fine.
But then afterwards he said, this is as bad an injury as I've ever had during a Grand Slam.
Yeah, I was, and then he reeled off the ones where he's retired from. So I'm assuming he means bad as an injury as I've had that I haven't decided to retire and withdraw. That's all I can assume.
Mm.
Does whatever Djokovic has got going on, David, impact how you think about how he would potentially match up with Nadal in the final? You've said Nadal to you feels a bit like an unstoppable force. He hasn't won a set against Djokovic on a hard court in 8 years.
Okay, I hadn't thought of that.
Stop dismissing the challenge of Aslan Karatsev, Matt.
I suppose, Matt, to be honest, when I see Djokovic right now, it's hard for me to imagine that he produces the form of 2 years ago.
Mm.
And I may be wrong. I mean,
and I agree. And therefore, Nadal is bound to get more chances. And unlike Zverev, he would probably be able to take them.
I also think if Nadal would have beat Tsitsipas and Medvedev and not, you know, imagine the form he'd be in.
Yeah.
Well,
that's true.
That's it, isn't it? If he, again, stop dismissing the challenge of Andrei Rublev. But that's it, isn't it? If it happens, what would be required for that to happen would really frame how we were feeling about Nadal going into
Look,
that match.
Yeah,
I think
you're right.
I'm just, you know what I'm like? I'm a sucker for a narrative. And I've got the narrative.
The narrative here, David, is Aslan Karatsev / All Russian final.
Not in mind.
That is a narrative right there.
It is, but Serena 24, Nadal 21, breaking records or matching
Wasn't
records.
Wasn't Goran ranked 114 in 2001? Isn't it the exact same ranking?
No, he was lower, I think.
Okay. It was similar.
It was similar.
100 and something.
Underestimate him at your peril, I would say, is just one of the things I've learned about him this year. I'll come on to talk about tomorrow's order of play in just a moment. But first of all, some other notable events from day 9 in Melbourne. Matt, Bermau are out of the men's doubles at the quarterfinal stage. They lost 6-4 in the third to Ivan Dodik and Filip Polišek.
Ivan Izovic was ranked 125.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sad news. I need to look more into this, but it is potentially problematic, I think, for them. Not just that they're out, but part of the reason they were playing together again is the Olympics. And I think Mau is fine. I think he would get into the Olympics, but Herbert needs to slightly improve his ranking,
oh,
I believe,
gosh,
in doubles. Mm.
Would Mau play without Herbert? They've tried that before and it was sad for everyone.
I know. Roger Vasselin. No, surely he wouldn't be ranked above Herbert. I don't know. I need to look more into that.
Okay.
But I know that that is a plot line.
Please urgently do that.
Mm.
Krejcikova and Siniakova, the third seeds in the women's doubles, they're through to the semis, as are Mertens and Sabalenka, the second seeds, and Nicole Melikar and Demi Schuurs, the fourth seeds. So the second, third and fourth seeds all through. Obviously, Strzokova and Shea were the top seeds. They went out very early. And then that quartet of pairs in the semis is made up by the unseeded pairing of Nina Stojanovic, who we saw play Serena in, I think, the second round, and give a pretty good account of herself, really, and Daria Jurak. I've got nothing. But she's an Australian Open doubles semi-finalist. In the wheelchair event, some really interesting storylines overnight. Dida de Groot and Annick van Coot beat, and my apologies if I inevitably get this wrong, Cogzatso Montagne and Lucy Shuker to win the women's wheelchair doubles title. De Groot and van Coot won all four majors together in 2019, and this is their seventh title together overall. All of these wheelchair players and winners, all the quotes I've read from them overnight from these matches are, I don't know, they seem to be just particularly poignant because they have no guarantees about when they'll next be able to play a Grand Slam tournament. You know, all of us are saying, you know, we take nothing for granted anymore, but that applies tenfold for the wheelchair players just at the moment. There are no guarantees for them at all, and they're particularly grateful, as you were saying, David, just to be able to have played this and had this experience. And yeah, it's a great feat to have got these wheelchair tournaments to happen by Tennis Australia. Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid defended their wheelchair doubles title. They beat Stefan Ude and Nicolas Pfeiffer, the French pair, 7-6, 7-6. That's five Grand Slam titles on the bounce for Hewitt and Reid, and a 10th overall, which is not bad going, I would say. Dylan Alcott and Heath Davidson, the most Australian-sounding name of all time, they beat Andy Lapthorne and David Wagner, 6-2, 3-6, 10-7 in the quad wheelchair doubles final. That's their fourth straight title together. They do love a streak, the wheelchair players, don't they? It's extraordinary. Dylan Alcott, incidentally, is also in the quad singles final. He'll be bidding to win a seventh singles title. Also, some of these numbers are just extraordinary. And that match is scheduled in prime time in Australia on Wednesday. It's second on the Rod Laver Arena after the Nadal-Tsitsipas match, which is super cool.
It really is, and I wouldn't mind watching that, I must say.
Yeah, he's a big deal in Australia, Dylan Alcott, and rightly so. And I know he did a bit of TV presenting for Channel 7 when they had the rights. See him pop up in adverts, but I can't remember what for. Maybe Bunnings. Everything's Bunnings, isn't it? Bunnings Warehouse. I missed that. I missed the adverts for Bride and Prejudice, followed by Bunnings Warehouse jingles.
You don't when you're over there and you've got it every 10 seconds.
Right then, the schedule, the order of play for day 10 at the Australian Open. It starts at midnight again. We're back to the slightly earlier starts with Ash Barty against Karolina Mukova. That is followed by the All-American Inter-Friendship clash between Jen Brady and Jess Pegula. We're mates now, so just calling them by their shortened names. Then it's the All-Russian clash of Andrei Rublev against Daniil Medvedev. Also mates, aren't they? And then the night session, as I said, it's Tsitsipas against Nadal in the singles. Do we see any upsets tomorrow?
Well, you'll find out in the newsletter. Which is going out in a few hours' time.
No, because you only pick one prediction for the newsletter, okay. David. Overall.
No, I don't see any upsets happening.
I think I agree.
So you see Barty, Brady, Medvedev, Nadal.
Hold on.
I think Brady, Pegula, possibly.
Yeah, and I did pick Nadal to lose by this time, didn't I?
He didn't even feature in any of our predictions.
No, so that kind of doesn't count anymore. So I can give a proper prediction of Tsitsipas and Nadal, can't I?
Yeah, feel free.
Ooh. Well, well, well. I'll have a think about it.
You look like you're about to nod off, David. Shall I get this show off the road?
Yeah, wrap it up.
Billy Dean did just fall off my knee.
Right.
In a sort of semi-comatose state. So that's your order of play for tomorrow. We'll be back with another podcast. Crumble will still be our Australian Open mascot. Hello, Crumble. Zeus will still be mine. It's not going well, Zeus, but we we ride again tomorrow. Matt, how's Scousel Mousel doing for you?
Pretty good. Djokovic in 4 came in today.
Oh, no. Did you get both of yours wrong, Catherine? You did 2
no.
today.
I got the winners, but not the sets, and we're in a sets situation.
That's a blow.
So, yeah, it's a big blow.
Not to worry, eh? Not to worry.
But I've got a dog to blame it on now. It's Zeus. David, who are you blaming your failings on?
Rogue,
yeah.
No, Rogue, it's me. It's me. I know it's me, all right? And I will up my game. I promise.
Our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee, top bloke. And our shout-outs, Matt, are 4.
Leslie Burville Holmes.
Oh, hello.
Oh, that's a sensational name.
A little bit like Leslie Bowery.
Yeah, that's what popped to my mind.
With whom's bust we recorded an emergency podcast last year. Happy memories.
Yes. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.
Ivo Gielis.
Oh, my
God. Oh, hello.
We are flying today with the old shout-outs. All right,
Ivo. Hang on, as in Ivo G. Ellis, as in, like, Sterling K. Brown, or...?
No, Ivo as in Ivo Karlovic.
Yeah.
And G. Ellis as in all one word, G-I-E-L-I-S.
I bet
Ivo loves a section of the show where we get Matt to spell surnames.
I reckon Ivo Gielis is an F1 driver. What do you think?
I feel like I would have heard of him if he was an F1 driver.
I don't mean actually.
I think
I mean,
David
should
means
be.
In an alternate universe, Matt.
I mean, should be.
Mm. Right.
Hereafter.
Top bloke, anyway. Top bloke.
That's how it's decided, isn't it? You get a ride if you got a good name. Sorry, carry on.
Only one more to go, Matt.
That one is Anna Keating.
Right, oh, Anna. Like Ronan.
Oh, God.
Yes, I can see where this is going. And no.
What, you don't want to sing? But life's a roller coaster, Matt. Go for it.
Oh, that has been your day-night tennis podcast. Even Billie Jean actually recoiled when you did that, David. Billie Jean is all of us. We've been the Tennis Podcast. If you can face it, come back and listen to us again tomorrow. Day 10 at the Australian Open. We'll speak to you then.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.